Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, vice presidential debate. Kane, Pence, they go at it. Who won on style? Who won on substance? Race relations came up. They barely talked about it. Trump's tax returns came up. Also, foreign policy. Will break down the debate with our panel. A Pennsylvania town council and residents call on the mayor to resign after his racist Facebook post about President Barack Obama. You will be surprised to hear what residents have to say. Growing African-American businesses will explore what's holding black entrepreneurs back from partnerships with corporate America. Also, Nat Turner biopic, Birth of a Nation, hits theaters on Friday. We'll talk about the movie with the cast as to why they took part in this powerful film. Plus, it's Wednesday, which means our comedians are here for a little fun. I'm sure they got something to say about the debate. We'll have all that for you, folks. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now, TV One, right now. Folks, last night, vice presidential debate in Virginia. Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, Republican nominee. You also had, of course, Tim Kaine, a Democratic nominee, senator from Virginia. They squared off. The moderator was Elaine Keano. You wouldn't know because they basically ignored her throughout the debate. They went at it on a variety of issues of importance to this country, whether it was race relations, whether it was the issue of foreign policy. Also, tax returns, but also a lot of issues when it comes to comments made by Donald Trump that Mike Pence sort of ignored. Here's a roundup of last night's debate.
Here's what I learned as a mayor and a governor. The way you make communities safer and the way you make police safer is through community policing. You build the bonds between the community and the police force, build bonds of understanding, and then when people feel comfortable in their communities, that gap between the police and the communities they serve narrows. And when that gap narrows, it's safer for the communities and it's safer for the police. That model still works across our country, but there are some other models that don't work. An overly aggressive, more militarized model. Donald Trump recently said we need to do more stop and frisk around the country. That would be a big mistake because it polarizes the relationship between the police and the community.
Police officers are the best of us. I mean, men and women, white, African American, Asian, Latino, Hispanic, they put their lives on the line every single day. And let me say, at the risk of agreeing with you, community policing is a great idea. Mm-hmm. It's worked in the Hoosier State, and we fully support that. Donald Trump and I are going to make sure that law enforcement have the resources and the tools to be able to really restore law and order. When an African-American police officer in Charlotte was involved in a police action shooting that claimed the life of Keith Lamont Scott, it was a tragedy. But Hillary Clinton actually referred to that moment as an example of implicit bias in the police force, where she used, when she was asked in the debate a week ago whether there was implicit bias in law enforcement, her only answer was that there's implicit bias in everyone in the United States.
I just think
what we ought to do is we ought to stop seizing on these moments of tragedy. But Senator, please, enough of this seeking every opportunity to demean law enforcement broadly by making the accusation of implicit bias every time tragedy occurs.
Elaine, people shouldn't be afraid to bring up issues of bias in law enforcement. And if you're afraid to have if you're afraid to have the discussion, you'll never solve it. And so here's an example, heartbreaking. We would agree this is a heartbreaking example. The guy Philando Castile, who was killed in St. Paul, he was a worker, a valued worker in a local school, and he was killed for no apparent reason in an incident that will be discussed. and will be investigated. But when folks went and explored this situation, what they found is that Philando Castile, who was a, they called him Mr. Rogers with dreadlocks in the school that he worked, the kids loved him, that he had been stopped by police 40 or 50 times before that fatal incident. And if you look at sentencing in this country, African Americans and Latinos get sentenced for the same crimes at very different rates.
We need criminal justice reform. Indiana has passed criminal justice reform. But I just want to say, those who say
we should not be able to bring up and talk about bias in the system, Senator, will never solve the problem.
When an African-American police officer is involved in a police action shooting involving an African-American, why would Hillary Clinton accuse that African-American police officer of implicit bias?
I guess I can't believe you are defending the position that there is no bias.
All right, folks, let's get down to it. I pound Dr. Jason Johnson, political analyst with The Root. We also have, Deanna Bass, partner at Bass Public Affairs. What up? You good?
I'm good.
You ready for this? All right,
I'm ready.
Steve Ministeri, attorney and former three-term Republican state chair of Texas. Dr. Amos Jones DeWeaver, leadership strategist, author of How Exceptional Black Women Lead. All right, folks, that was just the one question. What's interesting about that, really, Pence and or no Kane really actually dealt with the issue of race. Pence went on this long... a long comment really dealing with the issue of why we keep bringing up implicit bias, this constant defense of law enforcement, if you will. And I'm sitting there going, can you please answer the question, Jason?
He didn't answer any questions all night. I mean, everything he said throughout the entire evening was a pivot and a defense because he's concerned about 2020. But I think what was probably most interesting about the night is the lack of specificity that both of them had for this question. For all the criticisms we can have of Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. she actually said in the first debate, we have to do something about racial discrimination. We have to do something about these issues when it comes to law enforcement. And even Tim Kaine couldn't bring himself to say anything other than implicit bias. Say racism. Say we have to do something about systematic injustice. Be direct. I thought it was a wasted opportunity by both of them.
It was a problem for me. It was a problem for me listening to Pence answer the question, and he touts the endorsement of law enforcement. He talked about how we must respect and how tough a job law enforcement does, and he singles in on a black cop as if there's no implicit bias with even black police officers. I think he totally missed the point about what's happening in this country when it comes to police actions.
I agree. I think that both of the gentlemen did not answer the question. I think that the goal of this debate, though, was to do no harm to their tickets. And so if that is the goal of this debate, then they did the job of dodging throughout the debate in terms of not answering questions. But when you think about the history of the Clintons' history of using race to their advantage throughout their political careers, then I think the team that has the most to answer are the Clintons.
Actually, I would say who has the most to answer are both individuals, both parties. See, I'm not going to sit and play this game of saying Clintons have more to answer, because the reality is here. You got Indiana Governor Mike Pence, Steve, who is sitting there on this debate talking about compassion, his issue when it comes to his faith. But there's a black man, Keith Cooper, where in Indiana, a pardon board has unanimously said this man should be pardoned for a crime he did not commit, and Mike Pence refuses to grant that. And the problem I have is... Dina, Mike Pence simply would not even remotely address the issue to shift to law enforcement when the question dealt with the issue of race and police. That's a problem for me, Steve. And it's like he's tone deaf speaking to what is a real issue in America.
Well, I think there's a danger that both sides on this issue are talking at each other instead of with each other. I think a lot of people hear all the criticisms of police officers and they think there's an indictment of all police officers. I think, on the other hand, people listen to people that are criticizing the police and say that they're indicting all the police. The truth is in between, which is that you have good law enforcement, but you also have racial bias that exists in society as a whole, and that spills over to things such as the police departments and individual cops. And I think we need to have a conversation as a society as to how to solve this problem, as opposed to arguing over what the problem is.
But Avis, part of the problem, though, is Mike Pence basically keeps saying, let's stop even talking about it. Stop even bringing it up. Not only that, I thought, again, this is where I thought Kane, when Pence went on talking about his uncle was a Chicago police officer, if I'm Tim Kaine, I'm saying, yeah, let's talk about the cops in Chicago who flat out lied in the Laquan McDonald case and was only forced to own up to the truth when the videotape was released.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much evidence of actions like that. And you're exactly right. Pence has been on the record of saying, let's just not even talk about institutional racism. That last night, when he was pressed about what in fact is inherent bias, he specifically related that to Senator Scott's reality. He completely ignored that question over and over and over again. The reality is, he's not dumb. This is a very smart and very cunning man. He knows that institutional racism is true. He knows that implicit bias is true. He just does not want to admit it, and he does not want to address the problem at all.
Two of them did spar also over this whole issue of name-calling. And Kane laid out this really tough attack on the Trump-Pence campaign when it came to Trump's comments. Here is that soundbite.
If Donald Trump had said all the things that you said he said in the way you said he said them, he still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables. She said they were irredeemable. They were not America.
Hillary Clinton said something on the campaign trail, and the very next day she said, you know what, I shouldn't have said that.
She said she shouldn't have said half.
Governor, this is Senator Kaine's 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, that's right. So now we're even.
Yeah.
look for Donald Trump apologizing to John McCain for saying he wasn't a hero. Donald Trump apologize for calling women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting?
Did Donald, it is his two minutes, please.
Did Donald Trump apologize for taking after somebody in a Twitter war and making fun of her weight? Did he apologize for saying African Americans are living in hell? Did he apologize for saying President Obama was not even a citizen of the United States? You will look in vain to see Donald Trump ever taking responsibility for anybody and apologizing.
Then, you know, Mike Pence sat there and kept shaking his head and said, he even said that Donald Trump didn't say those things. Donald Trump said every single thing that Kane just said.
And this was actually fact-checked, I think, by CNN. And Hillary Clinton, so Pence is, Kane was making the point that Hillary Clinton has apologized for calling a quarter of Americans deplorable and irredeemable. And the more troubling word is irredeemable to me than deplorable. But she actually never apologized.
Okay,
and so,
Dina, Roland, we ran down on this particular show numerous polls that show that Trump supporters believe that black folks are lazy, that black folks are criminals, believe that 67% to 70% of Muslims are also terrorists. And so, in fact, we literally ran down 10 different polls. Only one of those polls was under 50%. But the point is this here. Mike Pence, in this debate, kept saying Trump didn't say those things when he actually did. So it's going to be a little hard for the GOP VP nominee when he getting fact-checked to keep denying what Trump actually said.
I don't know that that he was saying that Trump did not say those things.
Yes, he did.
Okay, this is
he said out of his own mouth, well, Dina, Trump wait, did not no, say those
let,
things.
Let me get to say something. This is what I think that Pence, even if Trump clearly cannot, we cannot defend him for saying these things.
But Pence said he never said them.
I don't recall Pence saying that.
Steve, did you watch the same debate? Did Mike Pence deny Trump making those comments?
He denied that they meant what we're doing is narrowing down.
Dina, that's not what he said. No, Steve, you're a Republican. Did Mike Pence deny Trump made those comments?
He denied he made some of the comments. But let me make a point.
Go ahead.
Sometimes there was in the denials of what was said, he was talking about some very specific things. So, for example, when they said that Pence said that Russia, that president was better, he used the word stronger. So somebody may say, oh, well, he's denying what he said.
Actually, they got the video.
No, I watched the video.
CBS even showed.
I'm sorry.
Jason, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Every single time Tim Kaine mentioned something that we have all seen, heard, documented Donald Trump said, Mike Pence had the shaggy defense. It wasn't me. He didn't say it. No matter what, we heard what he said.
And,
and, But that's the problem. Well, first off, they're not voting for either of these gentlemen directly. But right. that kind of lying, that kind of blatant lying in the face of obvious facts is a problem. No, you say that if you say that Vladimir Putin, who throws people in jail consistently for simply disagreeing with him, is a stronger leader than the president of the United States of America, that is a problem. That is exactly the point. That's exactly what he said.
Okay.
Let me finish on this. The quote that they said he said was that he was a better leader. He denied it by saying that it says in the video, which it does, that he was a stronger leader.
Avis.
And so many
times.
Are we
going to argue between better and stronger? Like a Kanye video, really? Better, stronger, faster? It's the same thing. It is the same thing to say he is a stronger leader.
Okay, 1 second. 1 second. Avis.
You're acting as if Donald Trump only said one nice thing about Vladimir Putin. He has been riding Putin's jock the entire time, and you know that. You all know that. So to sit here and act like, oh, well, one time he said he was stronger, what he said about Putin was, he said nice things about me, so I'll say nice things about him. You know good and well that his entire campaign, he has been effusing himself around Putin. So to sit here and act like, oh, my God, this was just one mischaracterization is a blatant lie, quite frankly.
You got 30 seconds, and I go to break.
Last night.
I think the characterization of Putin, we all know that Putin does bad things. We all know that Russia is not the ideal country. But what the issue is that, yes, Russia is, it doesn't have the economic strength that we have. It doesn't have the spirit that we have. But even in that space, Russia has managed to exert leadership in a way that our nation has
not by oppressing and killing
people. Trump called a man a strong leader. If you want to keep trying to defend it, go ahead, but it's not the fact.
I think it's unfortunate that you try to box it into what it's not.
I'm just stating what is fact. Okay, hold on. I got to go to a break. I got to deal with this here. We'll be back. News 1 Now, TV 1 just a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
This morning, folks, in Southeast U.S. are bracing for Hurricane Matthew. The powerful hurricane has already had a devastating impact on Haiti. It's blamed for killing at least 5 people there. More than 1 million people on the southeast coast of the U.S. have been ordered to evacuate ahead of the storm. A state of emergency has already been declared in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas. Airlines are canceling hundreds of flights into the Caribbean. At this hour, Matthew is just east of Cuba and is a Category 3 storm with winds of 125 miles an hour, but its forecast has strengthened back to a Category 4. It's expected to hit the Bahamas hard and possibly make landfall somewhere along the southeast coast between Thursday and Saturday, bringing with it damaging winds, very heavy rainfall, and of course, flooding. The town of West York, Pennsylvania has censured its mayor for posting racist messages on Facebook. In addition to the unanimous vote to censure Republican Mayor Charles Wasco, the city council called on him to resign. Wasco's post included an image comparing President Obama and his family to apes. Another image was of rope with a message calling for the president to be lynched. Many of West York's residents expressed outrage.
They're not even just hate-filled. They're treasonous. They're threatening.
But one resident came to the mayor's defense.
If anyone wants to turn this country into just a socialist, communist hellhole, you're going to have to go through me.
So far, Mayor Wasco is refusing to resign and has indicated he may even run for re-election. He also has not apologized for the comment, saying he doesn't care what folks think. The contaminated water crisis in Flint, Michigan worsens as several residents are hit with a bacterial illness. The illness, Shigellosis, causes diarrhea, fever, nausea, vomiting, and stool containing mucus or blood. It is spread through unwashed hands and dirty water. Many Flint residents have stopped washing their hands due to the contaminated water and instead use baby wipes. CDC officials say this could be contributing to the spread of the bacterial illness. 85 cases have been reported in Janese County, where Flint is located, just this year. Prince fans can rejoice. Late music icon's home and recording studio, Paisley Park, will be open to the public this week. Tours are only available this Thursday, Friday, and again on October 14th. The limited schedule was set through a temporary agreement with the city of Chanhassen, Minnesota, the city where Paisley Park is located. The Chanhassen City Council voted 3-2 to table Prince Estate's rezoning request that would allow Paisley Park to operate as a museum. All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, how do you increase the success of minority-owned businesses in America? We'll talk to the head of the organization that advocates for black businesses. Plus, Nate Parker opens up about why he chose to take on the task of bringing Nat Turner's life to the silver screen in Birth of a Nation. Plus, while tonight Wednesday, get ready to laugh with our comedians. You know it's going to be a little wild here. News One Now starts, comes right back right here in a couple of minutes.
I am Eddie Bernice Johnson, representing the 30th District of Texas. You have one vote, the same number that I have. We got to use those votes. If you don't use it, you lose it.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, one of the issues that has not come up in most of these debates is jobs. Isn't it amazing? We've got a serious issue when it comes to the economy, but the issue of jobs. And the fact of the matter is, when you look at what's happening in this country, black women are growing business at a faster rate, starting business at a faster rate than anybody else. But the issue that still exists, and that is, what can you do to grow more minority-owned businesses in this country? That's a significant impact. Let me look at the graphic there. Some $400 billion in annual revenue when it comes to minority businesses, $49 billion in tax revenue generated, 2.25 million jobs created. Now, there are about 1.9 to 2 million black-owned businesses in this country. And Dr. Ron Busby often talks about this here with Black Chambers, Inc. He says that if every black business in America was able to increase their capacity and just hire one more worker, you literally can wipe out black unemployment in the country. Joining us right now, Josette Wright Lacy, president of the National Minority Supply Development Council, which works to increase opportunities for minority businesses. And of course, we're still joined by our panel, Jason, Dina, Steve, as well as Avis. So I got to ask you this question here. Is it disappointing to you to watch these debates and literally hear nothing about job creation, small businesses, and especially as it relates to minorities?
Absolutely. Very concerning, because we know that minority businesses are a factor in job growth, significant job growth. So not talking about jobs when it comes to minority communities, which are at risk, which have higher rates of unemployment, lower rates of education, using jobs as a way to get us beyond that, they're not talking about it. And it is very disturbing.
And what amazes to me, you would think that Donald Trump would see that as an issue, even when he has gone to talk to African Americans, which is very rare. He's talking about law and order, and I'm going, that's not going to resonate with the black people. You might want to bring up small businesses. You might want to bring up jobs.
Well, the issue is nobody really knows what to do with it. They don't really know how to handle that. How do you really create jobs in African-American, Hispanic, and Native American communities? You do it through entrepreneurship, which means corporate America is going to have to do its part. The government's going to have to do its part, and private citizens are going to have to do their part.
Steve, why is this not an issue? I don't understand.
No, I disagree with the premise that it hasn't been an issue.
Have you heard it?
Yes, I have, and I'll tell you where I've heard it. First of all, in order to have entrepreneurship, you need to have education. That's the key. If you look at unemployment rates of people that have college degrees versus high school degrees, Donald Trump has talked about using vouchers. In my state, for example, we use charter schools like the Kipp Academy, like YES, that are doing very well.
Okay,
he's also, he's also talked about having enterprise zones, the type that Jack Kemp promoted, and that's part of his plan. So he has talked about that.
Go ahead.
I haven't heard that. Now, I have to say that I was on a conference call with Hillary Clinton, where she was actually talking about small businesses and how to bring minorities and small businesses more to the forefront in terms of job creation. I've not been invited to any conference calls with Mr. Trump or anyone on his team about what we can do to really leverage the power of minority business.
Here's my whole point about the education point. That's actually for somebody who's going to launch a business 6, 8, 10 years from now. I'm talking about the folks right now who have businesses. And what I'm saying is, this is, to me, is something that, and one of the reasons you're not going to hear it come up in the debates, Jason, is because the people who are asking the questions, it's not like that's actually on their radar either. So it's kind of like, whatever.
No, they're not thinking about the number of minorities that are starting business. They're certainly not thinking about minority women. They're certainly not thinking about the difficulties in getting SBA loans and how that applies to what people are trying to do. But I think the biggest issue is this, and this is something I think is applicable to both candidates, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Donald Trump should be able to blow her out of the water on this issue. He should be able to, after years of business, have a resume, a long list of people that he has supported, small donors, small vendors, and he doesn't seem to have that. And he's got a bunch of people he's stiffed.
Black businesses, construction,
exactly.
Things along those lines.
Yeah.
What would you like? First of all, we got a couple more debates left. So when it comes to this issue, what do you want to hear?
I want to hear someone talk about an agenda for supporting minority business. I want someone to come up and say that U.S. policy should be based upon growing those businesses, making access to capital not so much of a barrier to growth in minority businesses. I want to hear people talk about enterprise zones that are really easy to figure out. I want to hear someone talk about SBA loans being easier to access. I want to hear someone talk about an office that really focuses on minority businesses and funding it. We partner a lot with the Minority Business Development Agency out of the Department of Commerce. Their funding is cut every time you turn around. She can't do her job if she does not have the funding to do the research to find out the impact. We generate $1 billion in economic output every day, minority businesses every single day. Where is that money going? We need to study that. You need money to study that. If you're not funding those policies, you're really setting minority business back. That is the key to the economic prosperity, not just of the minority business community, not just of the minority communities, but the U.S. economy. We're going to have markets where people can participate in the economy. You can't do that if you don't have a job. You need a J-O-B to spend money. And corporate America is not creating jobs. We have not even gotten back to pre-recession levels. They're not ever going to be back before to those levels. They're going to be doing more outsourcing. Government's going to be using private contractors. If minority businesses are not a part of that equation, 20 years from now, when the majority of the people in this country are going to be tan, at least tan, how are they going to spend money if they have no jobs?
Dana, when you hear this discussion about law and order, about what's happening in black communities, and you hear Trump cites these numbers, but also you hear Clinton talk about it, the bottom line is here, as John Hope Bryan said. He said, you've never seen a riot in a community with a credit score of 700 or above.
Correct.
And so the bottom line is, if you want to talk about what's happening with crime, with shootings, you want to talk about what's happening with power, you have to deal with small businesses, mm-hmm. because 65% of all jobs in America come from small businesses.
Small businesses. I agree. And I think that as a small business owner, I want them to talk, both candidates to talk more about jobs. But I think you've just said that in this economy, we haven't moved beyond pre-recession job growth. And so my question
in
is...
In corporate America.
In corporate America. Okay, so, but my question is, do we want to turn the keys over to the team that hasn't produced the job growth, or do we want to turn it over to a new team of people like Donald Trump who has the experience in creating jobs? And I think that, you know, Hillary Clinton, as much as she has in terms of 25 years of experience in public office, she really doesn't have experience in creating jobs. And even if you say, wait one second, even if you say Donald Trump got $1 million or however much he got from his father, that is a lot of money.
Actually, he got $1 million from his father, and he got about $14 million in loans.
And most
but he claims that he actually made it possible by himself.
Whatever,
go ahead.
Whatever the number is, if it's $20 million, most of, I recognize that I certainly couldn't get couldn't get $20 million from my dad
most
or
bank. Probably couldn't get $20,000.
Exactly. Right. So, but... We have someone who understands business and who understands the economy and economic growth in a way that Hillary Clinton doesn't. She has, in the last 200 million dollars she's earned speaking. She's created her wealth
okay,
by
go ahead.
Speaking.
Hold on one second. Right. Jose, go ahead.
So at the beginning of the segment, it showed the number of jobs that minority-owned businesses created. That was 1 year. 22 million jobs during the Obama administration. So whoever's in office, minority business is going to continue to do what it does. And if it can partner with our corporate members, if it can partner with government, they will create jobs. The question is, who's going to create the corporate jobs? Corporate jobs are not coming back. That's it. It's a wrap. Everything is going to small business.
Avis. Steve, 1 second, Avis.
And I just have to say, this is absolutely a critical issue. And I do also have to say that it creates an avenue for people to be able to create jobs that necessarily might not have access to education. Let me just say, my father, a former sharecropper, third grade education, built a business where he employed over 24 individuals, was very, very successful, 40 years, okay? So this is the pathway out of poverty,
Businesses hire other minorities. They're not going out just hiring people that are white people that have jobs. They're going out looking in at-risk communities. They're taking chances on people that are unemployed. They're taking chances on people that have been incarcerated. They're taking chances on people who have no education.
Roland, there's a bigger, broader problem. We have very slow economic growth. We're between 1% and 1.5%. I want you to think about something. When Bill Clinton ran for president, he said it was the economy, stupid, and he said that George Herbert Walker Bush had a terrible economy. You know what the growth rate was in the last quarter of George Herbert Walker Bush being president? 4.8%. The quarter before, it was 3.8%.
George W.
Ronald Reagan, I'm going to talk about that. Ronald Reagan, when he's president, had over a quarter with over 9% growth. He had four other quarters with 8% growth. He had an overall of 4.4% growth, and that's misleading because the first part was in a recession. You cannot create jobs, you cannot create businesses if we're going to have a slow 1.5-2% growth
rate. But here's what you did not say. That is also a reality. What you did not say is that you did not have the level of automation then that you do now. You did not have the level of technology then that you do now. You also had cheap credit then that you do now. And the reason, Steve, the reason our economy crashed in 2008 was because of that cheap credit. The reality is we lived an economic lie for 30 years. We had Americans who were living so far above their means, and when check was due, all of a sudden it came down. One second. 2013, you had $23.09 billion in small business loans that were handed out. African Americans got about $385 million of that. One of the reasons was because of the home foreclosure crisis, because for African Americans, if you don't have collateral, if you no home, no loan, no business. And so part of this whole issue when you talk about economic growth is also based upon what are the other factors, what global recession, also what happens there. So the question I have for Josette again,
but Roman, let me address something on that. Interest rates were much higher in the 80s and 90s.
I'm not talking about interest rates.
What I'm
talking about is you had individuals who were getting cheap credit who simply didn't have the economic means. And here's what happened.
Not in the 80s. You're talking about George W. Bush.
No.
I was talking about Herbert Walker
Steve,
Bush.
Steve, the reason I'm talking about George W. Bush, because that's what also, what happened during those economic years led to the recession she's talking about. And so the reason you had the slow economic growth in the last 8 years, because what happened the previous 8 years. And you cannot talk about economic growth today comparing it to 30 years ago if you skip over the previous 8 years.
Yep.
And so I'm sorry, that simply will not add up. That's like saying I'm going to talk about my life growing up and I'm going to skip over my parents and bring up my grandparents. No, I might want to talk about mama and daddy. So you got to deal with the previous 8 years. So that's why we had the slow economic growth the last 8 years, because of the previous 8 years. Last point for you, and that is moving forward. What is the outlook when it comes to that whole point about access to capital? I know with the new head of the SBA, she and I met, some changes have been made. Are we seeing more capital going to minority businesses?
Not yet. I think that we're getting there. They're approving more small business investment companies that can go into the community. The problem is getting into the SBA is very complicated. Navigating through it is even more complicated, and getting a loan on the outside of it is even more complicated. So what we try to do is put together a group of resources. If you're a small business, you're certified by us, we will help you find that access to capital, because that is the number one barrier to job growth in this country, has been for over 30 years.
Right.
30 years I've been doing this, and 30 years you ask an MBA, so what's the problem? I can't get credit, so I can't add another line. I can't take that extra contract because I can't get the access to capital.
Well, that's what it boils down to. We appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we come back. We'll hear from the cast of Birth of a Nation about why they chose to be a part of this powerful film that's hitting theaters on Friday, 23 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV.
Prior to the biopic depicting the life of Nat Turner, The Birth of a Nation, his theaters nationwide. Of course, it is a true story of the most successful slave rebellion in the history of the United States. Nate Parker, who produced, starred, directed in this film. He, of course, spent 2 years not working, raising the money to make this film a reality. It is a stunning film, unbelievable. Of course, it broke the records at Sundance, getting $17 million from Fox Searchlight to actually launch this. I caught up with the cast. I led a panel at the National Association of Black Journalists where they talked about how emotional it was working on this project.
And I'm sitting here and I'm listening to the teacher, and he was like, "How many people know who Nat Turner is?" And I'm like, phew. Right? I had on Tim's, bubble jacket, you know. I thought I was fly. Right? Because flyness, right? Masculinity, manhood, until you know better, are just rooted in different things. Nat Turner did this, blah, 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 I'm not listening. And then he says, Virginia, and I'm like, huh? Right? Because my people are in Virginia. And he begins to tell me this story about this man that was enslaved and was a preacher and then fought back. And I was like, that's not true. Honest Abe freed us. The guy with the like mole on his chin, and he was pensive, and he just kept toiling about the black problem, and he was like, I'll take this country to war before I allow there to be slavery for one more day. That's what we're taught. And then I learned that he didn't believe those things. It was in this class that my life was changed. And Nat Turner became my hero once and forever. Everything up until that moment was still my life, but everything after that moment would be different. I had a hero. People were like, well, who's your hero? People ask, like, who do you look up to? Nat Turner. Who's your hero, alive or dead? You could be Nat Turner. Like, who's your father? Nat Turner. Nat Turner. It was always my answer, and it was always more aggressive, as if to make intentional the thought process that you will not. Are there any kids in the room? Yeah. With me. Right? I wasn't even an artist. I was a computer engineer. I graduated management science information system for one reason. Anyone want to guess? The money. I go to communities now and I hear brothers, they're all saying the same thing. What's up, young brother? Trying to get this paper. Mm-hmm. What you doing? What you doing? You can get my music together. However, I don't blame them. You know, as my mentor would tell me, the doctor doesn't blame the patient for being sick. Right. He provides the medicine. So when I got into the arts, I was like, okay, well, this is the arts. You know, let's see what this, you know, I learned some black history. I'm going to do some stuff. First role opportunity, and Coleman may be able to attest to this, gang member number one, right? Thug number two, right? Tyrone. It was like, if your name is Tyrone, no disrespect. But this was the reality. I kept thinking like, oh, man, like, what am I going to do? You know, like, here's the conundrum, right? Hey, you want to be in our business? That's cool. It's like, sign in at the door. Let us know you're one of us. Let us know where you stand. And I just couldn't. Some of it was about not wanting my grandmother or mother to see it and be like, oh, that's the role. You an actor, huh, son? So long story short, that's when I started to pull together the pieces of Nat Turner so people could maybe have something that could contextualize their existence in a way that was connected to something that was powerful and that was strong and that was heroic and brilliant and faith-based. And it wasn't a contradiction because their skin was brown. But that's how I came to this conclusion. You know, I always say my activism, you know, is what I lead with, that my art's a function of that activism. But I just, you know, in making this film, I just wanted to create an alternative to the narrative that we're so many of us are fed, that we can watch this film and come out of it with a little bit of perspective, a seed, because this is just a seed. There were hundreds, and if not thousands, of revolts, but just a seed of dissent to what we're given ad nauseum in our school systems.
We've all been, you know, offered other slave narrative films. And my response, my standard response was, when you make the Nat Turner story, call me. But I just assumed Hollywood would not make the Nat Turner story, a film where all the white people die at the end. They're not making that. So I felt pretty safe that I would never do, you know, tell a slave narrative. And then the script comes across my desk, but it says The Birth of a Nation. And I was like, who sent this piece of propaganda? And who's making that? Who thought this was a good idea? And then he's like, no. It's I've reclaimed the title, but it's the Nat Turner story. Yes, Jesus. So it was. I mean, just like Nate, Professor Hill, UCLA, African American Studies class. That's when I really learned the truth about Nat Turner, and became obsessed. Mm. If there was a story that spoke to me, as someone who had fully assimilated, who wouldn't take a picture for a good 5 years without curling my lips because I didn't want my lips too big, it was somebody that fought back, saw injustice, and did something. Mm-hmm. It just never occurred to me when you're in it that there's another way. So then I hear Nat Turner, I'm 20 years old. This, And that's when all my friends from home were like, it's like, are you going to get off your soapbox today? Nope, nope. Not now, not ever. Sorry, I've changed. It was then just a matter of the logistics of being Mary Jane and doing it at the same time.
I came to this project with an offer from Nate, and reading his script, knowing what this man stands for, and knowing that he was stepping out on a limb to play all these roles in it as well, to play Nat, to direct, he wrote it. He had a vision for it. You want to be a part of someone's dream as well. You want to be a part of his conversation and the things that he would like to get out into the world and what he cares about.
When I got the script was emailed to me, I had a very similar response to Gabby, like the birth of a name, what? But then when I read the log line and saw what they were doing, I was like, and this speaks to how indoctrinated we are, they're going to let him make this, was the thought I had. They're going to let him make this, as if he had no autonomy of his own to just make the kind of project he wanted to. And then meeting Nate and just feeling how powerful he is as a human being and what he has accomplished here. And I am just constantly filled with pride that I got to be a part of it. I realize he is not the person that you question whether or not someone will let him do something. And that's what we all need to be. There is no let. We are human beings. There shouldn't be anyone allowing us to exist and do as we please. And that is what is so powerful about this film, to see black people fighting for themselves, not running away, but standing their ground, speaking out for themselves and saying what we need. It is so beyond necessary.
Praise the Lord!
Folks, this is going to be interesting to see what happens this weekend when this movie comes out. I mean, this is American history.
Absolutely. And I, too, am from Virginia, and Nat Turner is definitely one of my heroes. I've been disappointed to see that Virginia does not raise him up. We have whole Confederacy Row in Richmond, Virginia, but there's just this one little marker about Nat Turner's rebellion, and I'm proud to see that finally his heroism is going to be exposed to the world.
Absolutely. You know, I have an MFA in film and taught graduate film studies to undergraduates and studied, film, race narratives that never showed this side of the story. And so I'm excited to see it, told from this point of view. We have in Hollywood a long history of race narratives, and some are good, most are not. So it's exciting to see it told from this point
of
view.
I think it's important for young people to see real heroes as opposed to comic book heroes.
Well, I like Luke Cage, so that was a good week last week. But I'll say this.
Well, Luke Cage ain't that tough.
Exactly. He wasn't bulletproof. This is what's so important about this. We have seen films about the brutality of slavery. We haven't seen a real film about us fighting back. That's what's so significant about this movie. Black people showing agency from on the screen to behind the screen. This is not only going to end up being a hit, this is the kind of movie that kids of all ages can see, because if we can see ourselves getting shot up and beat up and raped and abused in Django and every other film, we can definitely see ourselves fight back.
Folks, tomorrow on News One Now, we're going to have another part of this interview where it's a stunning, when I got Nate Parker, that literally the whole panel started crying. Wait till you see this, where he talks about how a storm almost shut down this film. It did not get made, and it shows you the power of prayer. We'll show that tomorrow right here on News One Now. Panel, thanks a bunch. I appreciate it. Coming up next, we got our comedians in the house. You know it's about to be a little fun. News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. The star of TV1's new movie, Gene of the Joneses, Taylor Page turns 26. NBA All-Star Grant Hill turns 44. On this day in history, 27 black people and 150 white folks meet to form the first Reconstruction legislature in Richmond, Virginia. In 1872, Booker T. Washington enters Hampton Institute in Virginia. All right, folks, Wild Night Wednesday. Time for some fun with our comedians in the house. We've got Cletus Cassidy. You're not how to tie it?
No, let me tell you what. Let me tell you something. My mama told me always be honest. I ain't got no neck. Ain't no use in tying no neck.
No, but you didn't tie it?
No, all I ain't got no neck.
We got the Precious Turner with the church hat.
That's the cutest Precious I've ever seen.
Southern she Bell. Got the church hat, y'all. She got the
like
church hat.
Like my grandmother
going.
Taught me.
And then we got Wayne Minor, who's certainly not majoring in dressing up. All right, then. Let's get right to it. Really? I mean, just, you know.
He didn't know he was coming today.
He didn't know. I mean, at least Cletus
put on a dress shirt.
Yeah.
No, we all imagine, you know, we're all aware. Yes, we're all aware of breasts today.
That's scary.
We're
all
aware of breasts. Yeah, we're all aware of breasts because you got on pink, he got on pink, I got on pink. It looked like Easter in here.
I guess I have the breasts.
Yeah, and we've been aware of them.
Oh, yes. Fantastic. Different shades, different size.
Yep. There it is.
Man, roll out. All right, y'all, let's get right to it. Usually a car crash or a stalled vehicle are to blame for a traffic jam, but not in Philadelphia.
On the expressway, I had to pull over to show y'all the. Look at this. Only in Philly, man. On the expressway, I had to pull
okay,
over.
Okay,
first and foremost, why was exhibit filming from the side? That was an exhibit?
And he was driving too.
Yeah.
Yeah
so, wait a minute. So he was filming. And driving,
but that's not
and commenting.
And you know who would have went to jail? Not the guy on the big wheel, but the guy that was filming. He would have been the one that got killed. That's an amazing talent. Because you see how fast he's actually going?
I'm telling you right now.
The guy driving or the guy on the big wheel?
No, the guy on the big wheel.
Guy on the big wheel.
Where do you find an adult big wheel? That's the first question.
First of all, if he was in Texas, an SUV would have straight ran over
him. Would
have ran him. Yeah, he would have had to die.
They wouldn't have seen him.
Or in the country.
If he would have been in D.C., he'd have died. Southeast, first of all, they would have took the wheels off of it. Then they would have killed him.
You ain't right.
I'm not wrong.
Precious, you want one of those big wheels?
I do want one. I do want one so I can ride through the city, ride through the hood, and play some classical music.
And first and foremost, her name is Precious. She's light skinned. She's playing classical music. She ain't never been to nobody's
hood. Yeah, well, I've been to some hoods.
There's bass in classical music?
There is some you know,
she ain't
bass
listening
in
to
classical
no Tchaikovsky.
Music.
I mean, the only bass in it is the timpanis.
That's okay. What's the thing called? The machine.
She watched one episode of Lost Stop.
I'm sorry. What'd you say?
What's the one that they use to.
Explain.
You talking about an instrument?
It's an instrument they use. It's the one
First
they
of all,
use
she failed at playing charades.
You ain't lying. I'm trying to figure out what she's doing.
Musical therapy.
I'm trying to figure out what.
First of all, this right here is.
Now she's
this
right.
This has anything to do with an instrument. There's no instrument that you play like this unless you make her money late night in D.C.
The harpsichord. There we go.
First of all, a harp is this way. She ain't
it's
been
a
to church.
Harpsichord.
So everything
it's
is coming out.
It's a little one.
It's a harpsichord. With a D.
There you go.
You mean a violin?
Not the violin. You hold that with your chin. That's the chin.
I had no idea. I didn't know what she was doing.
Clearly, she played music for the BET Awards last night.
You know what?
Which is horrible.
As always. What do we expect from the BET
Awards? And I'm a rapper, so I know what horrible is.
You're a rapper?
That's what I do.
Really?
Really.
Did he just go a lower octave on you to talk to you though, Martin?
Really? That's what I do.
We from the country.
You're a country rapper?
No, I'm not a country rapper.
You say you're from
Hip-hop
the country?
I'm a rapper, but I'm from the country.
Okay, rap something.
A country rapper. Is that a thing?
Spit something. 16 bars, or at least 8, because we ain't got that much time.
Come on. Will you hurry up?
All right. First of all, I'd like to welcome all
damn
of y'all.
Damn it, stop talking and rap.
He can't rap.
Let me go to a break and
Wayne
come back. And let me deal with Not Z when we come back. What's wrong with him? Talking about he'll rap.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, y'all, welcome back to Wild Night Wednesday. We got our comedians here, Cletus Cassidy, Precious Turner, and Wayne. He say he a rapper minor.
Always.
He
ain't even got a rap to a woman. All right, y'all. Okay, let's head to St. Louis where a 102-year-old woman knocked a big item off her bucket list. Edie Sims called the police to arrest her. She apparently wanted to be handcuffed. put in the back of a patrol car, and carted off to jail. The police department was happy to oblige, and no surprise, she's not black. Who in the hell has on their bucket list to get arrested and sit in the back of a police car?
First of all, white people just do some crazy stuff, okay? Let me just tell you that. If she really wanted the black experience, now let me tell you this. First of all, that's not her first time being handcuffed and put into the back of a vehicle. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay,
I can look at
all your little freaky stuff is coming out right now.
And
Precious really smiling because she's like, I got a pair of pink handcuffs. Look at her.
She didn't
on that big wheel. She didn't on that big wheel. Right.
Meow.
What y'all not going to do is have me seeing on TV. Not on TV.
I'm just trying to understand, Precious. That's on your bucket list?
I guess everybody has something that they want to strive to in life.
To get arrested?
Hey, everybody has different goals. You can't judge people's goals. She wants to get arrested. She wants to be in the back of the cop car, locked up. That's on her.
She's been locked.
And I'm glad that she got a chance to fulfill all her dreams and her goals, because that's what we want for people.
Wayne, you have experienced being arrested.
Right.
Yes, I have.
You're a rapper.
So,
and
I've been arrested. Yes. Right. So, what do you think?
I think she's been in the backseat of that car a lot of times when she got out. So,
yeah, let's talk about your name being Wayne Biner and your Twitter handle being Black Mark 30.
Yes,
I think you're going through a lot of stuff.
I'm a bootlegger.
I understand.
Black Mark 30.
He's what?
Black Mark 30. He says he's a bootlegger. He's a bootlegger, a comic,
don't say
a
that
rapper.
On TV.
And then he's clearly not Jamaican, so I don't know why he got all these jobs. But Roland, can we move to something more important than his failed rap career?
What is that?
I actually brought you a gift because this is being my 75th time on the show.
The 75th time?
Well, it's not, but you always got to have number.
You got to hurry up.
I know you don't do black colleges.
Hold up. First of all, Sound of Class?
Yeah, that's the Elizabeth City State University marching band and going to Honda. They wanted to make you an official member of the band.
So Elizabeth City sent me a shirt. Now, Grambling sent me a leather jacket.
Okay, it's 2016, and nobody wears leather jackets.
The year of evidence, when that Templeton drops, you're going to be like, can I borrow that jacket?
Well,
I appreciate it. Elizabeth City, I fought for them to keep their school open when they were trying to get their money. Y'all got to go, and Wayne got to go rap. Holler.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.